Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, October the 29th, 309th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Fortuna City Manager Regan Candelaria. Hey, Guy.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
You a Red Sox fan?
Somewhat. I saw a game this year over at Fenway Park, so that was nice.
Ah, so you're rooting for team?
No, I'm a National Leaguer, so I'm...
You're rooting for the Cardinals?
I'm definitely rooting for St. Louis, yeah.
Huh.
So, Giants fan.
I never would have thought that of you.
I'm just, loyal to...
A fault?
Yes. That can be definitely said as a fact.
Okay. Yeah. This afternoon, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about winter preparedness. It's something, in theory, we are going to have winter. I guess it was kind of nippy last night.
It got kind of chilly in Fortuna. I remember we talked about this around this time last year.
Oh, you're saying I am also predictable to a fault. Fine. All right. Well, I'll try to work on that unpredictability then when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. Ha! Do you know where "let sleeping dogs lie" came from? What country that's a proverb of?
I do not.
Oh. Do you care to know?
Sure.
France. I would not have guessed that. Here's our quote, our proverb for today, however. It's a Dutch proverb. Roasted pigeons will not fly into one's mouth.
You always pick something interesting.
Yeah, well, you know what? You threw the gauntlet down about being non-predictable, so get prepared for roasted pigeons, buddy, all show long, okay?
All right, I've got a pigeon story for you.
Does it have spikes involved with it?
No.
Oh, okay, so it's not governmental interaction with pigeons.
No, not at all. It's an upset grandmother.
I hope it was your grandma, not mine.
It was actually my wife's mother. My daughter was actually playing with them pigeons and enjoying them, and she freaked out because pigeons can be considered,
flying rats, yes.
Yes.
How do you play with a pigeon?
She gets along with my middle kid gets along with every animal, and they all love her. It's just really.
Oh, really? She's got that magic aura.
She grew up a duck all the way from an egg. Out of an egg, it hatched. She took care of it all the way till an adult.
Really?
Yeah, wild duck.
This wasn't one from the grocery store.
No, I had found it near a riverbed playing golf and thought she'd enjoy seeing it because she loves animals and whatever, and it hatched on me.
You found an egg close to the river or the creek that you were playing golf. Yeah.
I hit a rather poor shot.
Yeah, apparently
that
so.
Particular time, yeah.
We're going to find out all kinds of things today, I sense.
Thanks for getting to the bad golf shot. Yeah.
But apparently it didn't get too far down the course so that you lost it.
No,
You saw exactly where it went in, yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, boy. A lot of times, Regan, when folks think about winter preparedness, it's this kind or it's that kind of preparation. When you look at it as a administrator, particularly in a rural community that does have creeks, drainage, watershed, those types of concerns. How challenging is it to anticipate what may or may not be coming down the, down the drainage, so to speak, particularly when you can't clean it out, you can't do the normal preventative maintenance things that everybody logically would say you could do because of state or federal environmental regulations?
Yeah, those do make things difficult on us as a city, but we do have a lot of history to rely upon in terms of what we did last year and what types of events we've seen over the past few years.
That would be predictable events,
well,
and predictable trends.
This year was very light, as you know, so we kind of had a light year and kind of got off free there, but we're not expecting that for this year, and we're trying to prepare as we had in all previous years for, you know, more water than we had, of course, over this last year.
So when the phrase I like to use, particularly like looking at the Eel, the Mad River's the same way, the Smith at Dr. Fine, it's blow the gunk out. Get rid of the gravel beds that have been built up, the trees, Redwood Creek also, the little scrub trees, the alders that grow in the middle of the creek. Let's have a good... I guess a good flood, a good gully wash.
A good waterway. Yeah.
Whatever you let things clear out. But it doesn't seem like we've been able to do that now, as these scrub trees are having growth rings that are indicating decade or more life. How do you get back to having the channels clear so that you don't have that extra brush compounding a bad situation, or maybe even causing a bad situation?
Yeah, it's a difficult task. As you mentioned earlier, there's regulatory agencies that are involved with, you know, a certain aspect of the situation. And sometimes it's difficult to get permits, and sometimes it's difficult to clear out some of the natural, you know, courses of water that have always been there because there are these certain things that are growing now, or, you know, different types of material or plants or animals that are protected now or make it difficult for... you know, clearing out a spot that maybe you cleared out 5-10 years ago, you know, maybe it's not so easy anymore to get a permit for that particular location.
I was talking to a buddy who shall remain nameless because it'd be too easy for him to get in trouble again. Talking about a stream renovation project, and there was a clump of trees, and the regulators were all down, you know, three of them were down on their hands and knees around the base of the trees, looking for frogs. Mm. And the question was asked, well, are these endangered frogs? No. Okay, are these prolific frogs? Yeah, pretty much. So why are you going around? We just want to know.
Yeah, it can be very difficult.
I would think frustration would be huge, particularly if you're a public, you know, somebody in the public sector in a department, and you're trying to get the job done, and you know you've only got so many days. You don't know how many, but you only got so many days before game on, and this thing's got to dealing with that kind of a culture. How do you work through that? Or is there a way that a city can do that? Hey, can you have a citywide, I guess, EIR? Can you do something like that, or is it specific?
That's an interesting concept. We've actually toyed with that, you know, in terms of, you know, identifying some of the water areas or the riparian areas.
We'll continue with our frog and water story in a sec. KINS, right. News and Information Time, it's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. The North Coast Repertory Theater is now celebrating its 30th season with 6 treats for Humboldt audiences. First is the George S. Kaufman Moss Hart Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy, You Can't Take It With You. Then the musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the Peanuts comic strip. After the holidays, there'll be a double feature straight from ancient Greece, the murderous tragedy Oedipus the King and the comedy Women in Congress. Next is the side-splitting Complete Works of William Shakespeare, a parody in which all 17 of the Bard's plays are played in 97 minutes. Late Spring features the North Coast premiere of the popular Les Miserables. The season ends with The Poor of New York, a melodrama from 1857 of the problems of a middle-class family not all that different from today's. For dates, times, and details, call 442-6278. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic organization dedicated to the people and events that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:24. We're back to talk about crickets and froggies and toads and lizards and...
whatever's out there.
Duck eggs. With Regan Candelaria. Regan, looking at doing a plan for the entire city at one shot, boy, it would just seem to be so efficient and would give you the opportunity then at one time to say, well, here's what we're planning on this block, but three blocks over in the same watershed, in the same, do you have an air shed? No, what do birds have?
I don't know that they have any kind of shed.
Airspace. Ah,
airspace, okay. Fly zone.
And yeah, flyover zone. Here's what we're doing and everything together.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we're doing and presented as a big project rather than a series of small, unconnected, unrelated projects. I would think that everybody would be on board with that.
Well, from
Could
a staff,
happen?
I don't think so. From a staff perspective, yes, we'd love it. But all of the different agencies and organizations that we have to deal with, you know, that have somewhat, you know, of a power, you know, system that they're responsible for and that they don't want to give up, you know, makes it difficult. We have to follow their rules and follow their staff direction. And, you know, their policies are what are guiding, you know, their direction. And if we don't follow along, then we're going to be out. And one of the things that we try to do as a staff and as an organization is, you know, look ahead and try and be prepared for that. That's what we're doing right now in terms of our, you know, our permit for our wastewater treatment plant that comes up in 2016. And you think, okay, it's 2013. That's 3 years away. But you got to look that far out and you got to be thinking about what are their permit requirements going to be at that time. So we're trying to meet those now so that when we get to that point, it's not let us start working on it. No, we got to be prepared ahead of time.
So you go down to the crystal ball shop and buy the biggest one you can find?
You know, you don't need to be Karnak right now to figure that one out. I mean, you would think so, but if you look back over the years in terms of the regulations and how they've changed and how stringent they've gotten, I mean, it's a direct, you know, line heading up, you know, and so we know it's going to be worse and it's going to be harder to get. So we're trying to meet that already, knowing we're going to have to, you know, up our game quite a bit. It's going to cost some money, but we need to be prepared for that as well. So again, that's why we want to start now making that plan so that in 2016, you know, we're ready to go and our city's not under the gun or not subject to fines or, you know, we're able to provide the services to our community that we need to.
With the disbanding, I guess would be the right term, of the redevelopment agency, a lot of cities went to battle on that one, obviously. The tire ruts across your chest give us a pretty good indication of the success ratio on that one. Do the cities have any better chance at trying to work with the state and the regulators about things like water quality, CEQA, some of those types of issues? Because there's got to be a carrying load capacity. At mm-hmm. some point, it becomes just too expensive to do more, and either the fines become easier to pay, mm-hmm. or let's just, you know, yeah, we have an antiquated system, but we can't afford to upgrade to whatever it is, so we're just going to stay status quo, run it clean, run it tight.
You know, it's interesting you're asking that question. It's actually perfect for us in Fortuna. I mentioned all of our efforts right now through our city engineer and the rest of our staff and our relationships with the water board, trying to make sure that we're going to be in shape to meet 2016's requirements, and we're going to get that permit when we get there. Well, we also happen to be moving along a second parallel track to try and, like you're saying, talk sense. You know, let the board know that, hey, we have these other opportunities that can meet, you know, those requirements that'll improve our effluent and also improve the Eel River and, you know, the Van Dusen and, you know, help the environment at the same time without going to the huge expense. So we have another one that's probably a little less, you know, certain that we're able to be going to accomplish it. But we're doing that at the same time because we think that's what's most prudent for our city and other cities and the state is to not just go the big, giant, high-dollar effort. We want to try and do it without spending that much money and having as much benefit or more benefit for the environment.
Can you upgrade a lot of the stuff and meet those standards or have things either evolve so much or special interest required so many new technologies to be purchased and engineered that you really don't have that choice?
I don't know that it's so much special interest driven, but there are new technologies. There's always things emerging, and they're costly. though. That's the only downside. And, you know, when you go to your ratepayers and you're, you know, putting forth bonds and you're raising rates to pay for those bonds so that you can make improvements, so that you can meet past permits, you know, and then you get to the point where, oh, wait, 2016's coming up and they're going to ask us to do even more. That's a hard message to sell that, you know, oh, we got to do it again because of this technology or because of these requirements. So that's a difficult part of it. But we feel like I mentioned, this concurrent effort that we're making, we have an opportunity to help the water and help the water systems and increase flows with the quality of effluent that we're putting out now. But there's permitting requirements and other costs associated with that can be roadblocks. We're trying to meet those at the same time of being prepared for the big 2016, you know, expensive effort.
Ready to make that turn at the fork. KINS, yeah. News and Information Times 330.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 335. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria from the city of Fortuna. Regan, with the regulators, is there an opportunity to think creatively inside the box? I know that there's probably hesitation about precedent setting. Okay, I get it. But within the parameters that are established, is there flexibility to put together creative plans like what you're indicating the city wants to do with the wastewater? I mean, that seems like a no-brainer, automatic.
Project. We really hope so, and that's why we're pursuing that avenue as well as preparing for the, you know, the big dollar improvements that might need to be made to meet a 2016 permit. But it's an onerous process, and they do look at a lot of plans, but they get submitted a lot of plans and have limited staff to actually review all of those plans. So.
You have limited staff too.
We do.
So for you guys to put a priority on this and to take a lot of staff time on it, maybe I'm outside looking in, but I would think if you've seen this to be a big enough project to spend a couple hundred or hundreds of staff hours putting this thing together, wouldn't it warrant somebody looking at it?
Well, we think that it will. It's just that, you know, they're looking at plans from a lot of different jurisdictions, not just Fortuna. So for them to come up with a staff time to look at, say, 30 proposals and know that they could only implement, you know, two or three of those each year, you have to make that cut. Ours has to be at that level.
Now, you've referenced a couple of times now that they have to implement. I thought you were the guys doing the implementing, and then they would just be getting the reports, monitoring what was going on and making sure that you're keeping it between the lines.
Well, the way I understand the process is if we submit a proposal to them for instance, a change to the basin plan, which is what we're pursuing, so that we can have an additional option for our effluent that we think will benefit the Eel River and Strong's Creek. But then the staff at the water board need to review that along with reviewing another 30 proposals that they'll get in. Then they need to propose that to the water board for approval. So that'll be their staff time, is to really, you know, do some analysis of that and then make their recommendation to the actual board, who would then say, okay, yes, you can move forward with that plan that we would ultimately implement in our city.
Does the board see all 30 projects with staff recommendation, or does the staff winnow out? And they never, it doesn't see the light of day.
Exactly. I understand that there's only three or four that they can analyze each term. So that's what we're trying to do, is trying to hit that top three so we can get analyzed by them and then get brought to the board.
Have you done the crab feed yet? Boy, I would think that there would be an opportunity for all kinds of interesting things if only 10% of the projects submitted get a chance to get a thumbs up or a thumbs down, trying to get to that. But this is the way the game gets played?
That's correct. It's a tough one. That's why I said that's our low percentage opportunity that we're pursuing, as well as being prepared for, you know, what we think is the reality of having to spend some serious dollars and make some major upgrades to our plant so that we can get, you know, in full compliance with a permit in 2016.
And you indicated that there's nobody from our region that's on the water board, the state water board.
I'm not really sure of the makeup of the board at this time.
How much does it, I mean, off the top of my head, but probably off the top of your head too, how much does it cost the city in regulatory, I guess it would be compliance, whether it's a project like this, trying to make it to conform, or the ongoing maintenance, or putting in programs, plans, personnel, whatever the resources are, to do the paperwork, to do the reports, to send it off to whoever is going to either review it or put it on the shelf. Any idea?
You know, I really don't. That's an interesting question. I'm sure staff won't hate me if I go back and say, hey, let's analyze this and try and figure it out. Because
just a gut sense. Yeah. 10% of everybody's time? 20?
I'd be thinking more towards 20 or 25. I mean, wow. You just think about CEQA. Pretty much every project has an element of that that we need to address and determine how what the impacts will be. Projects like these that we're doing, you know, it's going to be 100%. You know, that's all this is compliance with our wastewater treatment plant. So it's all of the money that I'm spending on engineering and consultant help and staff time and, you know, these efforts to do outreach to try and get reviewed by the board for our proposal to the basin plan, that's 100% of our time.
And that could be spent on local advertising monies. I know that's what you'd want to do with
that
it.
That is an option.
Yeah. This morning on all day long with Community Comment, we're hearing about a memorial project for John Campbell. What is that in a little bit more detail? Aaron didn't have, you know, as much time to elaborate as what you have.
Okay, I'll give you a brief synopsis of that. The title of the project is actually the John Campbell Memorial Greenway, and it's not really. Well, it's a project that was named after John Campbell, a very influential person in our community and in this county. But what it really is the designation of a trail that can be accessed, you know, bicycles, hiking, maybe even equestrian. But it's an area basically from, you know, the River Lodge right near the Eel River there, all the way up to ultimately would be to the headwaters. But within our city right now, the focus area is between, say, the River Lodge and Newburgh Park. So from, you know, one end of town to the other. And what we were successful at doing as a city is applying for a grant from the state to do some planning to create a master plan for this potential bike trail. And so that's what we're in the midst of right now, is we've just completed a great design fair, a week-long activities schedule of planners and engineers and Caltrans representatives and county representatives, all of the community members from all the different service clubs and residential groups and everything to, well, what would you like to see in terms of a bike trail or hiking trail in our town?
You did all your public hearings in 1 week?
We had meetings twice a day for a week and just really had a real design fair with a bunch of information. And we're going to be utilizing that to create the remainder of this master plan for a potential trail in town.
Geez, I wonder if there's a lesson there that county could pick up on. KINS, News and Information Times, 343. We'll be back with more from Regan Candelaria.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Time is 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria. Regan, the concept of a bike trail, I would presume that Fortuna has got a lot more bicycle riders than other communities, family-based, recreational, mm-hmm. Not those cruising neighborhoods at 3 in the morning.
No, we don't.
Kind of bike. Yeah. How do you determine how big you want the trail to be? How wide it should be? What is what is the potential use of it? I mean, it's not a matter of doing this study or that study. Is that part of the feedback loop that you get when you have the public meetings?
That's definitely what we're getting. And that's why we go out and do that and have, you know, community outreach and input before the engineers and the architect types, you know, really design the park. Just find out what the needs are in the community and what types of current usage we have and what we could potentially see in the future. I mean, that's very important. And then really there's going to be some constraints from the natural environment, you know, where you're proposing this trail, where can you actually go? what's going to be the cost for easements and, you know, right of way and all of that type of thing. And so that's a big effort and that's going to be a big determining factor. But then the users, you know, we took a look at and found out from the community where the best places are that make sense for parking. You know, or people come from the community that can come out, where are their access points going to be to this trail? And so that's a big help. And, you know, you can't always just know that from City Hall or from looking at maps. You got to get out there and talk to the people and find out what's reality sometimes.
Have you familiarity with the Moraga Lafayette area in the East Bay, around St. Mary's?
Yeah, I don't know about
bike trails. They've got one of those trails, a bike trail, and it kind of... It's serpentine, kind of back and forth across the two-lane road that's there. Really, it split rail fence, so you can, you know, you get the view sheds and stuff. And certainly, it's a different kind of a neighborhood than what we've got around here. Mm-hmm. But it really blends in well to the community, and it's not like somebody foisted themselves in, and it's not like it's a primary commuter path. Mm-hmm. It's just through the neighborhoods and stuff. And that one is probably the best example I can pull out of my head of integrating it into the neighborhood. It's a neighborhood feel. Mm-hmm. And it kind of get the sense that the neighbors maintain it a little bit too, instead of lobbing it onto your staff to be able to keep this thing.
Yeah, we're hoping, you know, the location is kind of a natural because it follows Strong's Creek. The city's got a couple creeks that run through town, and this one in particular is kind of a good link from, you know, I guess I'll call it the west, from the Eel River up to the east side of town where there's Newburgh Park, which is a, you know, community serving park and has a brand new bike park thanks to the local bike community committee. So, you know, it kind of makes sense to kind of link those two areas.
Any thoughts to make it big enough to be able to use like golf carts on it and things like that? It really, I mean, take some of the load off the main drags. I'm thinking about what Eureka missed out on. If you could put in something like that, any thoughts along those lines?
I don't know about vehicles like that, but definitely bicycling and just to have that alternative mode of transportation.
It wasn't that weird of a show.
No.
Okay. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Thank you.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day, hug someone you love, see you tomorrow.